advisors and parliamentarians and advisory services to introduce themselves accordingly. Can I take this moment to allow members to introduce themselves?
Start with members first. Say thank you, Chair. I'm supposed to have a member of the committee.
I'm Silence Makuvel, a member of the committee.
Lopez Lawrence, member of the committee.
I'm Dikas van der Westhuizen, member of the committee.
Good morning, Jake Dikobo, committee member.
Chairperson, good morning. My name is Pesi Moleke. I'm the DDG for Skills Development in the department.
Hidon Wen, a State Advisor, Office of Chief State Advisor.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Anthea Gordon, Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
I take this opportunity to permit the Department to lead the presentation on the Skills Development Amendment Bill.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I just want to apologize on behalf of the Director General for contacting you guys to the meeting today. Here, the presentation is about the introduction of the Skills Development Bill. First of all, just a bit of background and process. The bill was published for public comment. During that developmental stage, consultations were held with the with NEDLAC, the National Schools of Quality, and the role players, and the members got huge support to enhance service delivery by CISA. And these issues raised during those processes were then addressed. Here, the bill obviously is dealing with a limited number of aspects that the functioning and the enhancement of the effective service delivery of CISA is one of the main focuses of the bill.
I don't know that.
What is it? South Africa. South Africa, and with the minister engaged with the principal. The bill was referred to the Minister of Labour. As the other important aspect of the bill is to clean up the references that were made in the proclamation number 56 of 2009. Which assigns specific tools to the Minister of Labour. These courses are now in the process of being enacted through legislation, which is emanating from the Minister of Labour, and this process will therefore run parallel to that, and the important thing is that these provisions can only be fulfilled with the specific concurrence, the agreement of the Minister of Labour. The bill was after consultation. The bill was further subjected to a NEDLAC process of discussion and negotiation. And here it was supported, except for one clause, which is Section 11. The amendment to Section 11, which was most of the employer organization, who were not agreeing to be gathered to partners of NetPure. Chair, the bill was submitted to the state law advisors, which certified us within the principles of the Constitution, and it was approved by Chair. The bill seeks to deal with the following issues. It deals with the amendments relating to the establishment of CETA, the amalgamation and the dissolution of CETA, the incorporation of subsectors from one CETA to another, the composition of CETA accounting authority, the disqualification of members of a CETA accounting authority, the constitution of the CETA, the conduct of members of staff of the accounting authority, or the accounting authority, from engaging in business with relevant CETA, disclosure of conflict of interest, the repeal of sections which are excluded from the transfer of the statutory function to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, which relates to employment services and productivity South Africa, and to provide those matters to connect it therewith. Yeah, if we look at the different clauses individually, clause 1 introduces a number of definitions. These definitions relate to the CETAs and clarify the concept, among others, of the accounting authority. It deals with the issue of what is the chairperson, or who is the chairperson. It also amends some redundant references to old legislation and correctly to refer to the applicable legislation. Clauses 2, 4, 14 to 18, 20 to 25, and 27 are dealing with those provisions in the School Development Act that have been assigned to the Minister of Labour. These clauses seek to repeal those provisions from the School Development Act once the corresponding labour legislation is enacted and comes into force. These clauses must be read with Clause 31(3) of the bill, which provides that the Minister cannot determine a date on which these sections will be repealed unless the Minister of Labour has approved such determination. Clause 3 substitutes the references to the repealed South African Qualifications Authority Act and replace it with the National Qualifications Framework Act. So this is only a technical amendment. Clause 5 deals with an amendment to Section 9 of the Skills Development Act, and here the following clauses up to Clause 14 is dealing with the amendments to the CETA environment and must be seen in the as a combination of amendments. Here, Clause 5 amends Section 9 of the current Act to allow the Minister to establish the CETA for a specific period, and also once that period lapses, the Minister must reconsider it on the basis of need and the functionality in the system, and re-establish the CETA for another period if needed, if not, establish a new CETA to perform the specific functions as required by the Act.
Not the next ratify.
Isn't the separate is a clone of a culprit?
This is an amendment to Section 9.1 of the Act, only the rest of Section 9 is not affected at all.
Clause 6
is dealing with an amendment to Section 9, Capital A of the Skills Development Act by providing the statutory framework to deal with the consequences of amalgamation that is an existing provision in the Act, and here the right to amalgamate different centers has already been part of the legislative landscape, that how you deal with it, the procedures attached to it, has not been dealt with to such an extent that it provides legal certainty. This is an attempt to provide for that vacuum that exists in the current legislation. Clause 7 introduced a new Section 9B, Capital B, which provides for the incorporation of specific SIC codes. And a SIC code has been defined as to mean a code contained in the standard industrial classification of all economic activities published by Statistics South Africa. So, it is a terminology that is used within the CETA landscape for a number of years, and it is also providing that legal certainty when there is an incorporation that it is clear what function will be moved from the one to the other. This is one of the areas that cause major difficulty when the minister announced the CETA landscape in April this year, in order to deal with those functions that will move from the one to the other. And this process will then on and simplify the process of integration in future. Professional bodies, from bargaining councils or organizations in a community with an identified interest. The 15th member is the chairperson, which is independent and is not related to any kind of agency. It provides further that all the members except the chairperson has voting rights. However, in the case of an equality of votes, the chair has a casting vote. It also provides the criteria within which the minister must apply when the members of the accounting authority are appointed. It provides for the process to invite nominations from the identified bodies before the minister appoints those members. Chair Clause 10 introduces two new sections. The first one is a new section 11A, which deals with the eligibility to become a member of the accounting authority. It requires that the member must be a citizen who resides permanently within the Republic of South Africa. It also requires that the person to be appointed may not be mentally ill or disordered. It also requires that the person to be appointed may not be convicted of a criminal offense without a fine, and that is also followed up by another condition that the person to be appointed may not have a criminal record which involves a theft, fraud, forgery and uttering a false document or corruption. The other new section that introduced is section 11D. This section requires the members must disclose any conflict of interest. The member may not be appointed unless such a disclosure has been made and he or she has no direct or indirect financial interest in the setup. If a conflict of interest occurs at any stage during proceedings, the accounting authority, the member who has a conflict of interest must disclose such interest and may not participate in the proceeding. And if the member fails to disclose the interest, or is present in the meeting, the proceedings of the accounting authority shall be null and void. Here, clause 11 seeks to amend section 13 of the Act. This clause provides for a standard constitution, which is attached as a schedule to the Act. It also provides flexibility. It provides flexibility within a structured framework of the legislation, and it is possible that the CTAP can apply to the minister to deviate from the standard constitution. That the CTAP can only do it if it is supported by the fact that the deviation is required due to the unique functions or operational requirements of that system. It is justified in terms of the National Skills Development Strategy, and it is also recommended by the National Skills Authority. Clause 12 introduces two new sections. The new section 13A provides for the conduct of the accounting authority members for staff to declare a conflict of interest, and here what is important to provide a prohibition. Upfront prohibition to the members of staff and the members of the accounting authority not to conduct business of a commercial or financial nature. It also provides that any person may draw the attention of the chairperson to the possible conflict of interest, so provide for whistleblowing opportunity. And chair, it requires that the member must refuse to remove herself from the meeting. Chair, the new section 13B, capital B, provides for the appointment of the chief executive officer. And this is one of the other areas of concern of a CTAC and the relationship between the chief executive officer and the accounting authority. And especially the fact that there has been an overlap for a continuation of the chief executive's employment, and it is not linked to the existence of the new CETA and the time frame within which that CETA be established, which also caused some discomfort. The amendment is to provide the synergy between these two very important structures within the CETA, and therefore it requires that the CETA must, within 6 months of the establishment, submit 3 names of the person who have experience in accounting, financial and senior management matters to the minister. The minister must appoint the CEO from the list of names received from the CETA, and the term of office of the CEO is linked to that of the accounting officer. It also provides for a set of regulations. It links to the conditions of service and other matters which the minister must develop and provide the structure within which the CEO, the chief executive officer, will lead, and also provide an overlap between our 6 months between the old and the new CETA in order to ensure that there is consistency. The clause 13 amends section 20 of the Act. This clause corrects the references to the Repeal of African Qualifications Act and substitute it for the reference to the Inclusive Act. The clause 19 is a further technical amendment in order to be consistent in the Act when referring to the Inclusive Act. The clause 28 introduces Schedule 5, which is the prescribed standard constitution of the CETA. The schedule provides for the format and the procedure which is required for in the government action based on the principles contained in section 9 to 14 of the State Development Act. Clause 29 is a technical amendment to the long title of the Skills Development Act to replace the references to the South African Qualifications Authorities Act of 1995 with the National Qualifications Framework Act of 2008. The clause 50 is dealing with the transition arrangements to ensure that all CETA comply with having a constitution in line with the standard constitution. Those constitutions that's currently in place and approved by the minister that's already in line will continue to exist. If, however, the current constitution is different from the standard constitution, contained in Schedule 5, the minister must consider it and also consider the possibility to allow for a deviation as provided for in terms of Section 32 of the Act. Obviously, within the limitation of those three criteria provided by the legislation. If it is not possible to accommodate the deviation within the prescripts of Section the defeat of the act, the minister must direct the speaker to align the constitution with the standard constitution contemplated in the schedule within the prescribed period. So 31 has already referred to some provisions of it, but 31 is providing for the short title and the commencement of the act. It is very important that the act will commence on a date determined by the minister, and that section 1, 2, 4, 14 to 18, 20 to 25 and 27 cannot commence except if the minister or later agree to the notice published in the release by the minister of the Chair, the constitution, I haven't provided to all the different aspects of it, but yes, this is a document which is based on the principles of the act and is consistent with the principles of the act, and it provides a structure and a uniform approach to the constitution that will be the framework within which all people will operate within the framework of the Youth Development Act. There have been a number of definitions that have been repeated in the constitution, which we also find in the main act. There, that is done because of the ease of reference and the fact that the constitution is a very important instrument within the existence of any speaker, and here that what is important, all those definitions are aligned with one another. Here it also provides for some repetition of the legislation and provisions, the composition and those provisions as contained in section 9 up to section 14, the functions of the system and so forth. Here, once again, they are necessary in order to make this a EU reference document for CITA, and that they don't need to go through the legislation all the time. And so, because this procedure is part of the legislation, they will continue the legal process within which are applied to the function. It is assumed to be act, and therefore it is part of the government. Chair, if there is a need, I can go through the different provisions of the constitution, but Chair, it will be based the constitution is based on the provision, and it just provides the procedures and the format which must be followed during such a measure. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Any additions that the legal advisors may want to make? Okay, then can I allow members to raise questions or make comments on the presentation by the department?
Thank you. May I just start off by thanking Advocate Boshoff. Again, Chair, we see in this proposed act signs of centralization of power, which we feel is not always in the best interests of the country, and especially not of this sectoral education and training authorities. We are concerned about the very important and very large role that the minister is allocating to himself, and we doubt whether the minister and his staff has got the necessary manpower to really oversee all the important decisions that he or she, and responsibilities that he or she would be receiving in terms of this act. Chief, I can just go on to some specific matters. If we can go to the section difficult. Can I call it Section 6, which amends Section 9? Do we find it on page 4? And there's a paragraph 14. Notwithstanding Subsection 13, until the new single CETA has made disciplinary codes or rules, the disciplinary codes and rules of the respective old CETAs are applicable to employees. I was just wondering whether it shouldn't be necessary to state that, you know, the CETA that you've come from, that their disciplinary code will obviously apply to you and not the other new amalgamated partner. Then the very last sentence on that page 4, paragraph 7, which amends 9B2B, if no amendment can be reached in the manner determined by the minister. My question is just, would that include a process whereby the minister would be compelled to take into consideration the inputs of the concerned parties? I think in terms of an administrative action, perhaps, you know, there is other legislation which already would require that, but I would just like to get that assurance. Then, Chair, if I may continue on page 5, under the substitution of section 11, which our document is paragraph 9, so it then is 11.2b, and actually A as well, it says the minister must appoint 14 persons as members of the accounting authority of a CETA. The members referred to in paragraph A must include 6 persons who must be nominated by organized labor, 6 persons who must be nominated. I have a question regarding the word must. Would that be the most appropriate term to use in a sentence like that? And then secondly, I see there's no time frame within which those appointments must then be made. And I was just wondering if it would not be wise to include a time frame, because should a person want to play games, he or she can, you know, just say, well, I will appoint or I must, but, you know, I'm not going to do it this year, I'm not going to do it next year. You know. And then in that position, positions can be kept vacant for an indefinite period of time, which I think would be an unhealthy situation. Then, if we go on to page 6, paragraph 10, which amends 11B2, there my question is regarding the disclosure of conflict of interests. I do not see in what way, and perhaps I've just missed it, these declarations of interest would be made public. You know, it says it will be recorded in the minutes of that council meeting, but you know, quite often people keep minutes confidential, and I just believe that a declaration of interest as far as possible needs to be, you know, out in the open, and people should be able to peruse that and see what possible conflicts of interest there are. Then, on page 7, our paragraph 11, which amends 13.2c, there it says, and it deals here with possible deviations from the standard constitution of CETAs, there it says the minister must approve, etc., and then the minister may approve if the deviation is recommended by the National Skills Authority as an essential deviation. Now, my question deals with the first one, recommended. Normally, I think the need to deviate from the standard constitution will come from that particular sector that feel that, you know, say, for example, we've got 7 sectors, that's and we want all 7 to be represented on our accounting authority, and the Act only allows for 6. Now, my question is, shouldn't the word supported be a better one? Because what that would then entail is that the council would apply to the National Skills Authority and ask, would you, you know, go along with this? Can you also see the merit in this? But if we say the National Skills Authority must recommend it, my understanding is then it must almost emanate from the National Skills Authority. And then the next one, as an essential deviation, Chairperson, there's very little things that, as far as I understand, that is essential in terms of the operational needs of a CETA. And I think the word essential is just a bit too strong. Essential is almost something saying that we cannot live with this without this deviation. You know, without this deviation, we will go under. And it's not essential. It's just we want to improve the functionality. Essential is to my mind, a very strong word. The other one is 12.13b, the very last paragraph on page 7. The members of an accounting authority must, within 6 months of their appointment, after following a transparent process, submit a list of names or three persons who have experience in accounting, financial, and senior management matters to the minister. And here, I want to say here, we've got a clear example of how the minister is grabbing power in this respect, in the sense that if eventually the minister will be appointing the chief executive officer. And I find it a very sorry change that the accounting authority, who in a sense we want to call the accounting authority because we want to hold them accountable, but the person eventually appointed is not appointed by them. And in a sense, I question how we can hold them accountable if the CEO does things which they have got very little direct control over. But also, within 6 months of their appointment, there could also be vacancies that arise in the ordinary way of people resigning from positions, or people getting to retirement age and things like that. And I'm not certain, I'm not sure, if this allows for the process to be followed midterm, if I may call it like that. Then also, in the third paragraph, that's the second one on the top of page 8, if we all are working from the same document, it says, the chief executive officer must stay in office for a period of 6 months if the CETA in question has been re-established. I find it just strange that I can tell somebody, you must stay in office. You may not resign. You may not die. You know, things like that. I just am feeling a bit uncomfortable with that sort of formulation. And then also, I see very little consultation. You see what happens there also. We see in paragraph 5 there, the minister may make regulations regarding the performance by a chief executive officer of his or her functions in terms of this act. But I see very little reference that the accounting authority will be determining the performance criteria that they require of that chief executive officer. Again, it seems to me as if we want to call them the accounting authority, but essentially the performance of that chief executive officer is determined by a government department and government officials sitting, you know, quite a distance away from this specific sector. Chairperson, with that, thank you very much.
Slightly in a fix, my understanding, although I do have an issue to raise, my understanding was that for purposes of today's interaction with the legal was mainly to introduce this issue so that we have got some clarity in terms of basis of future engagement. When we sit on our own engaging this whole thing, we should have a clear understanding where it's coming from, you know, so that we engage the process, giving some context. And then I thought that was done. Yes, there may still be issues here and there, but I thought they've got some later date to can engage on. However, personally, all I wanted to understand, having been briefed, that we arrived where we are after some consultations with relevant bodies and so on and so on. Without you needing to channel us necessarily, broadly speaking, I would want to understand what are the sticky or thorny issues, you know, which this piece of legislation should necessarily help clear, but still among stakeholders there are still real questions, you know, which warrant that at this level we must be able to unlock, you know, help clear that and so on. If there is any in that particular direction, I thought we could be taken on board to say these areas were highly sensitive in the discussions between the bodies, not necessarily the names, but these ones are arguing for this or that, not the entire process, not to say around this and that and that, I believe, challenges, you know. I thought that would literally help this meeting. Even as we retire to another discussion, we won't know what we need.
Let's take on the call with the Honorable Guinea on fellow.
No, thanks, Chairperson. The comment by Honorable Makubela also helps me because, you know, I was just thinking, I've written some points, but I'm thinking then I'll be debating with Advocate Boshoff, and I think he's the wrong person to debate with. There are many areas where one would say, no, I don't agree with this one. He can't make me agree. For example, you know, just the question of a one-size-fits-all for sitters that serve constituencies that are, you know, different in size and character and all those things. But maybe I should restrict myself to a question of clarity there on composition of the board. My question relates to the 6+6 and then +2. The 6 of the employer and then the 6 of labor, and then the other two by a government department. And again, it maybe just shows what I mean by one size fits all, and I'm going to explain. Let me use the ETDP CETA as an example. In that CETA, the biggest employer is the Department of Education. Both basic, well, jointly, higher education and basic education. They are the biggest employer. So in my head, a sizable number of the 6, just looking at proportionality, would possibly come from the department or the departments. Now, if my understanding is correct, why would the department still be entitled to this one or possibly one of the two or both of the two? Is that not two bites of the cherry? Unless there is something that I'm missing in terms of who the employer is. And I'm using this sector as an example. I guess if you go to other sectors that are, you know, in a sector that is dominated by the public service or public sector, then you would have them as employer. And therefore, what would be the need to say, no, of the two that are remaining, they must still be there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mine would be very short on clause 31, where we talk of the commencement of the Act. But however, some of the sessions will commence after the Minister of Labour has agreed. Then my question would be, where are the engagements right now with the Minister, with the Department of Labour and the Minister of Labour? Because as we have started here, yes, we are going to process everything, but can you clarify how is the process going that side? Where is the process right now so that we can have an idea as to how are we moving? Are we seeing this Act commencing any time soon? Thank you.
anything to say?
Thanks, Khadebe and the chair. Mine is just an issue of interest. A clause 10, bullet 2, says a person to be appointed may not be mentally ill or disordered. I just want to find out how is that determined, or is this limited to visible mental disorders? And then my second issue is bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But these other bullets are on the other page. But this is still closed down. If a member fails to disclose the interest or is present at the meeting, the proceedings of the accounting authority shall be null and void. I am thinking of a situation where the authority discusses bona fide certain matters and come to a particular conclusion. And then it is discovered very, very late that a particular member had an interest. Then is the nullification not going to be difficult? Actually, my question would be, is there no other remedy besides nullification? My last question as well is a question of interest. In an area that says the new section 13B provides for the appointment of a chief executive officer. And then it says three names of persons who have experience in accounting, financial and senior management matters. I'm interested in finding out these senior management matters, because I would imagine that we are talking about qualifications here. Are we looking for a CA? Are we looking for an accountant? Or are we looking for an all-rounder here? Thanks.
Meet the department to provide responses to the questions raised by members. The aspect of the bill
members to be appointed. Chair, it must be read also in conjunction with Part 5 of that clause, which provides that the minister must at least 3 months before the end of the period of consultation. I want that in the current FIFA term of office for that, invited in order to ensure that it is out there. He does not provide when the minister must start with it, that it at least provides that it must be 3 months before that period is out, in order to have it in place when the new FIFA is appointed or established in terms of that section. It is also important that when one looks at the comments made about the provisions of the new section 11B, that the conflict of interest must be limited, and the question being that shouldn't be made public. It is not a common practice that any company or any statute requires there is a conflict of interest published in newspapers or in advertising news to make it public. Obviously, interest is party, but the right in terms of the access to information to get that information. If they feel that it affects their right, but to place an obligation on the institution to publish it would be financially quite diverting, and it would also the question that we ask, what would be the value added to the intention of the minister is to prevent it from happening, that there is no conflict of interest. That's a very important thing. Before a person is appointed, you declare. And if the thing happens while you stay in office, you must also declare. And if you don't, there's consequences to it. So the whole approach is to bring it on the table, allow for the whistleblowing process, and also putting an obligation on the individual. It further provides the actor, it provides if enacted, a framework where it is a special prohibition to do this, so that there is no uncertainty around it. So the issue of the publication with that of the very position that what is the value added to you. So the other issue about the word of in terms of the amendments to section 13, the deviation clause, the aspect of the word recommended instead of the word supported, the function of the National School Authority in terms of the School Development Act is to advise the minister and to make recommendations to the minister on the matters related to the school development act. Chair, this is just to be consistent with that approach. Chair, also the word essential that's used in that when the recommendation is made, that it is linked to the word essential, which is a very strong word. But Chair, the whole principle of a standard constitution is to provide a framework by Parliament to the CITAs to indicate that this is what is required as the best model to deal with governance within such a structure. And Chair, if you give a act of Parliament and you allow for a unfettered discretion without principle, clear and decisive principle, it would make the minister to overrule what Parliament says, and would, I think, be unlawful in the end. So, just the more precise and specific one can be in the criteria within which the minister might exercise the discretion, the easier it is to deal with the intention of the legislature to ensure that the in decision making which almost nullifies the intention of having a standard constitution as the first principle. The issue of the minister playing a centralized role, I can say, this was an issue that was discussed with the role players, and it was their recommendation. In fact, it was supported by the National Schools Authority. It was supported by NEDLAC unanimously. During the engagement with the PISA, the minister was a huge support also. So the role of the minister to take the delivery of PISA and to ensure that it is within the national security strategy was the mandate given, and that is what is very. So that is what forms the basic principles under which this temple has been brought. The issues of that was raised about the sticky areas as part of the consultation. During the consultation with the National Security Authority, there were no sticky areas identified at all. It was unconditional. During the NEDLAC process, there have been one area which been identified, and that was the area pertaining to the amendments to Section 11 of the Act, and the whole issue, the aspect that caused some concern is the fact that the chairperson must have no voting power, and the casting vote is therefore also a problem. That the biggest concern was actually the voting power to the two so-called ministerial appointees. Those that be recommended outside the six and the from the organized employer and organized labor. Business of Africa or the employer component within NEDLAC felt that that is those two members should not be members with voting rights. It was not the view of the government, and it was actually not the view of Labour. They supported the government's proposal. The reason for it was that a member who is carrying a specific vote of a constituency must have voting rights, and the two members that is coming from the full constituency, which is interested government department or government departments with an interest, your bargaining councils with an interest in that area of the city, your professional bodies with the interest, and community members in a community that has an interest in that area of activities of a CETA must make nominations. And here what is also important, the process of identifying those bodies are within the structure of the schedule. Schedule 5, it provides that they must be listed within the constitution. So it's identifiable a group of entities that must make it. And on based on the openness, the participative nature of the CETA and the function, government and the organized labor supported the view that all the members except the chairperson should be voting members. The other issue that they raised, that is the employer constituency raised, is that there must be a definition to the organization, the communities in the as
role player, and that that must mean a body within the community that does not fall under a community organization, which was very vague, and it's not clear what is meant by that. The approach that was taken in the bill is to say anybody who feels that they comply with it will apply to the CETA to be listed in terms of Annexure 4 of the schedule, this standard constitution, to be listed as a organization, community organization. If CETA is of the view that that, person, that entity got an interest, it will be listed, and that listed group of entities will have a right to make a nomination to the minister. It's much cleaner, it's much clearer, and the final decision rests with the CETA as a group of employers, employees, and other role players to determine if this organization can make a difference or can have a say or can be affected by any decision of the CETA. The other aspect that they also raised is that before the appointments made by the minister, it must be made on the recommendation by the National Skills Authority. The view of the organized labor were that the constituencies are identified. The minister gets a nomination from them to make those two nominations. Obviously, if a organized labor and organized employer decide to provide more than 6 names, then the minister must make a decision because the Act limits it to 6 on each side. But it is within criteria provided by law. It is persons with a knowledge and experience within the sector, which as a whole must be gender sensitive, representing gender, make sure that the person have the experience and the knowledge to be a member. If there is consensus within that cluster of role players, then the minister will only get 6 and the minister must appoint those 6 men. If they don't get consensus, the minister must make a discretion, but it's once again not an unfettered discretion. It's a discretion within the principles provided by law. And here, when it comes to the other organizations, once again, as I've already indicated, they are all listed. It is known who would be the role player. And here, the question of the members also to the representatives of the department, the interested departments. One, if you look at the language used in Clause 11, it provides that those two persons will be nominated by any government department that has an interest in the relevant sector and that is not an organized employer. So if it is an organized employer, the example used of the public service sector, then it means they will be the employer. It provides the flexibility that in the other sectors where departments are not they are not the employer, but they've got a definite interest, then at least it provides an opportunity to be appointed as a member. Obviously, it is the constituency that will provide the name. If they can agree amongst themselves, then obviously the minister will appoint those that have been nominated if the number tallies to 14. If it is not, the minister will use the principle provided in the legislation, no matter from which constituency it will then receive those nominations. The other issue that's been raised is that of the process with the Department of Labor what is the communication, the legislation that will affect the enforcement of Section 31, those pieces of legislation have already been introduced to Parliament. They're in the process of promulgation within this parliamentary session, and it is there have been meetings. The DDG for skills development have meetings with the Department of Labor, and Department of Labor was also part of the government delegation when we dealt with this issue in NEDLA, and there is an agreement that they will inform us about when they are ready to enforce their legislation, and the minister will monitor it and also communicate with them and to ensure that there is a need to fast track to deal with it if there is any pressing need from the Minister of Higher Education and Training side. Now, the bottom line, the Minister of Higher Education and Training cannot enforce that legislation unless there is written agreement to that effect. Chair, the other aspect that's been raised is the issue of the provision of it is clause 10, which deals with the disclosure of the new section 11B, which provides that the proceedings will be null and void. And it's also dealing with the issues around the section 11A, which is also part of course 10, where it's dealing with mental illness and disorder. The presentation obviously just addressed the principle, but the finer detail is in the draft bill. The bill provides that this person is not qualified if he is subject to an order of competent court declaring such person to be mentally ill for this order. So it's not any person that will come and make a claim. That person must go to court, declare that person to be mentally ill before that disqualification will kick into effect. Chair, the other issue of the null and void is that is it not going to be difficult to process the outcome and that is tainted by a person who participated. Even if you come to a decision at a late stage, it's still tainted and that process is declared null and void. It doesn't mean that the CETA can deal with that issue anew and provide a similar or a different outcome, but at least it takes the issue of a person who got a real interest that is in conflict with that of the CETA and make sure that that person cannot influence the proceedings and then withdraw and then say, well, I declare. The consequences are therefore to say that if you elect to play the field, you will know that by law, as a consequence of law, those proceedings will be played null and void, and it would mean a reopening of the matter and a new process to come to an outcome. Here it's much easier than to try and to deal with a different approach where the final outcome is not null and void, but it is therefore really difficult to legislate that. The other option would be to go to court each and every time, which is a very costly exercise and might not be the desired outcome. Just that is what they call when the court will declare it null and void, instead of as a consequence of law, when it is null and void.
Yeah.
Then the last issue that been raised was relating to the appointment of the CEO and the provision that the person must have experience in accounting, financial, and senior management matters. Here, it deliberately did not refer to qualifications. It also is not limiting it to experience, but clearly those characteristics and aspects must be present when you deal with a senior manager who deals with this very important role of distributing that very large sum of money. And therefore, the words of relating to matters as providing for this more all-rounder approach, but with specific focus on that specific area of expertise that is required to be there.
I will allow members some 5 minutes to conclude this debate. I do know that the issue of the constitution of the standard constitution of the CETAS has generated considerable discourse amongst the CETAS themselves. You would remember that we had a meeting with the CEOs and the chairpersons of the boards here in Parliament, and they raised a number of concerns which we advised ought to be dealt with by the department. And this process of formulating this legislation gave an opportunity to the department to interact with the comments and concerns that were raised by the particular CETAS. During the course of the week, I was reading one book about checks and balances, dealing with the judiciary, the implication of maybe the president appointing judges from a list determined by the JSC and so on. And I noticed that in this aspect, there is also a question of balancing the power, the board recommending a number of three of which they all prefer, out of which the minister will not deviate and appoint somebody else. It is a way of sharing power somehow, and so on. I'm not opening a big debate, but because the department has the members are entitled to react to that as the final arbiters of the discourse here. I'll allow members to comment for 5 minutes. Honorable Gobo, Honorable Mr. Hayson.
Thank you very much. Disclaimer here is that my proposal to maybe look at a further change does not necessarily mean that I agree with the point being raised. That is the issue of the appointment of the CEO, where it only says they submit three names. Shouldn't there be a way that says in order of preference? In other words, we're just throwing in three names. But if a body throws in three names, shouldn't we say no? Well, I'm not saying I'm going to appoint you a first preference, but shouldn't it be in order of preference? That's the first part. The second part also relates to the issue of a conflict of interest. And I'm just trying to, with my little understanding of the mischief rule. Now, look at what happens. I'm a member of a board. I go into a process. I don't declare my conflict of interest. So as a result, the process is declared null and void. And then I come into another meeting one day, another process. I don't declare. And the matter is declared, the results are declared null and void. I see, something tells me we're punishing the wrong person. If the aim is to root out corruption, because the assumption is that, well, the board knew or should have known that so-and-so person A has. So after declaring, shouldn't there be some punitive measure against the person who caused what one could regard as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, waste of time, people's time? Shouldn't there be such a clause to say, no, but, you know, we declare null and void, but we must also deal with you. And this may also include kicking you out of the board because you are dishonest.
Chair, just a question regarding the members of the accounting authority. One of the issues that were raised by the minister is that he would like to restrict the remuneration paid, or then the allowances paid, to members of the accounting authority. Am I just not reading that particular paragraph? Have I just slipped it? Or is there reference to that issue in the papers before us? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair. I think Honourable Go has just also alluded to some of the questions that I wanted to ask. But also, Chair, you know, this thing of giving all the powers to the minister is really not correct. Because once you amend this bill, giving all the powers to the minister, and you are saying this portfolio committee is then, you know, cannot be able to comment on other things because you gave him all the powers without, you know, searching all the other routes. Because one of the other views that I'll just come with is that, you know, Power BI, the portfolio committee must play a role in terms of interviewing and appointing some of these board members. So that at least we assist the department. I think it's sort of a norm in the other portfolio committees that is happening. And it's a view that has also been raised previously, if you remember correctly. And has never probably been taken into consideration. But I'm still raising it again. And probably it's one of the other issues that should be able to be explored. Thanks.
Chair, I'm just worried that ultimately we may be engaging in a wrong exercise for now. Whereas the discussion or issues raised helped them think on other things beforehand, like whether you want to say in order of preference or this or that, to some degree it opens up certain things, which is not necessarily a bad exercise. But I'm just saying it's not yet time for us to concretize on anything. Issues might have been raised, fine. It's possible that when we come back next time around, some of the proposals we're making may even have been changed, you know, by the very individuals who said them today in a particular way, you know, after engaging with them seriously. So I'm saying it will be very difficult to then say proposals are emerging from this meeting seriously, when in fact there's still another thoroughgoing engagement, even public engagement and so on, which will take us to a well-formulated kind of opinions on certain things. For now, I'm just saying, Chair, I'm reluctant basically to enter the fray or say these are my views and so on and so on. I just want to hold back and encouraging all of us to try and say, let's not engage for now. We have views, we have been assisted, we can engage in a real debate later on. We can question whoever comes with whatever proposals because we have been enriched. But let's not venture into saying these are our opinions already at this point in time.
Well, thanks. I think I agree with the discourse. To some extent, it helps for members to engage in that debate so that the department can reconsider whether they could. I mean, the issue of in order of preference may as well help and so on, and it's not invidious to whatever proposals that the department had brought before the committee. And I think what Makubela says is also very correct to say that this is not the stage at which we must intensify our engagement with the bill is merely to orientate us as to the essence of the bill so that we prepare ourselves more seriously for the debates to ensue at a later stage. And lastly, in thanking members, I really would enjoy one day interviewing members of a board. But the only limitation, as I was reading a clause on separation of powers, maybe we as parliament should eschew the temptation to appoint people who exercise significant executive powers. I mean, if it was the SABC, I would understand because of the requirement to assert independence, then the parliament can play a responsibility and so on. But I do one day wish to interview a CEO. That opportunity does not usually arise where I am, you know, because it might be an interesting experience for me to interview a CEO and even appoint a more competent, qualified one who's very, very, you know, able to exercise the powers and so on. But those intricacies of separation of powers, we must be careful about. And I think that brings us to the close of the first aspect of our meeting. We'll adjourn for 5 minutes for members to stretch their feet, after which we are going to discuss our own in-house matters, adoption of minutes. Thank you very much for your presence in this department, and for the legal advisory people from the state law advisors and also internally in Parliament. Thank you.
And I'm not looking forward to going there again. Our current is a woo, so looking forward to going there. Not me.
Ibhodi ingahlala nehlanye for as long as record kungazange kube khona i-order ethi lo muntu uyahlala. Nifundiswa kanjalo kanti umthetho.
No, that time will come.
No,
no. I guess part of it may be that you got that, and over the weekend, you got that to Egypt. You might not be sure of the process.
Something was pushing
so we're reminding him that no, the process comes in stages. So this is another, we're getting to the one you're looking for.
Well, that we did know you were speaking about the whole DC.
Wow.
No. Politics is always in there.
Yeah.
So he's already politicking.
No, also
but
I think
know
these things are televised.
The previous bills that we have just adopted.
Yeah. I just started.
If you tell it because you only mentioned the lady.
No, but also for political reasons, isn't it just in
relevant? Yeah. Uh-huh. Now let me think, and I'm trying to eat with television.
V
Yes?
Senior is threatening, perhaps prioritize the
I'm told this problem is, I hear this thing is a problem in cabin.
Senior and so on, yeah.
Yeah, so saying I've been given a junior. Shut up when you are junior, so you are a junior minister.
And they look at that in terms of the funds allocated to the department and so on. They look at,
because the more funds, the more bread.
But on the committee, it was basically almost equal to some degree. Yeah, but in terms of priority.
Will the fourth telecommittee actually to tell us?
For example, if you deal with education, I mean, almost everybody is interested, and almost everybody is an expert, almost everybody has something to say about it.
Yes.
You can never come across somebody, you ask a question on education, the person says, no, I'm not interested, or I don't know.
But but one minister once raised this question, one senior commissioner, saying, I see all the marches everywhere, but nobody has ever marched for quality education.
Yeah.
Why march for other things which are not important? Why don't you march for education?
Yeah.
You know, and you want to march for something else. Because if it's private and basic and everybody understands it, then mobilizing people around the educational matters and get them to march.
No. But look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Yeah. Education is not. The need for food and all those things, those are basic.
Yeah.
If the person doesn't have, in the condition, of course, the shelter, what was an education that put in the
system.
But you feel quickly if you are hungry.
Yeah.
Unlike if you have not gone to school.
But at the same time,
the effects are long term.
No, but parents and students and all that should know that if I'm poor and in poverty or poverty stricken today, it will actually be sustained if I'm not. So the hunger
cycle becomes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you must see it as an urgent thing to deal with this thing. So that
information needs somebody who can read. A link between poverty and education.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
It's a good one. That's why
poverty is there. Yeah.
How do you self actualize if not educated?
Okay, colleagues, we have got about 10 documents to do. We'll start with the meeting of the 10th of August, 2011.
August.
Thank you. Got everything.
Of August 2011. Do you have copies?
Adoption proposal.
there's just one issue, and that is a numbering issue. But for, as far as contents go, that's on page 3.4 is missing.
Of the 17th of August.
That meeting I remember very well when we debated whether a meeting with or without a quorum or a non-meeting, and I move for adoption.
Any second? Thank you. Let's go to the meeting of the 24th of August. Other corrections or additions?
Or windows, because it's extremely hot in this. And I'm suffering from hot flashes. I want to put it on record. Thank you. I don't mind being on television either.
Anyway, that full stop on the last page. The minutes for the 31st of August, when we're processing the two bills.
I think on this meeting I arrived late, Chabon. But I apologize because I'll be late. So I don't know why my name is just an apology, because I was present, if I can't believe.
Okay.
I propose adoption in that note.
Okay. Any second?
Chairperson, second, I just want to know, you must just know when you do the last page, you must sing and not sign.
I just take it that even on this one, Master Luke will be properly signed. Yeah. But then as well, Chair, just in passing, remember we used to have, we have as a member here, Ms. Magashi, speaking. And I just apologize when we know she's not alternating here because of her ill health and so on, and I don't think we ever break the committee proper. So that should be understood why.
Is that the reason why she's not always attending?
I want to agree, Chairperson, that I think some of us said for the third time when we were at the skills conference that she was actually in hospital. I had thought that after we have done everything, would say whether we have as a committee send our speedy recovery message. If it has not been done, maybe we should just do that official. We know that we'll do it as individuals, but also as a committee, just to say to her we are with her in our prayers.
Any second for the adoption of this week? Okay, thank you. Now we're going to deal with the draft public hearings report.
Chair, we have agreed that where spelling mistakes appear on all of them, they will really be corrected. Chair, your full stop issue is like giving the committee a problem. They don't know the context from where you're getting it. But it's last page, full stop, and they're wondering what they write to the full stop and find it there.
So that means if it's included in my copy, it's a mistake. Chair, I want to move adoption of this report.
Before the adoption, Chair, this is page 8, yes? There's 3.9. After 3.9, there's 3.121.
Yeah.
Okay. No. That can be corrected. Yeah? The wrong number.
Gee, there's only the spelling.
No, August 10, 17.
6 years. We're done with 6. Yes, we have.
You might have forgotten to ask. That's why Honorable Lawrence was saying,
yeah.
Have we done 7? Because from 6 you move to
yes,
the report.
Yes, yes.
7? It's not a trans match.
The spelling of that journalist of the Burger
It's a very unkind way of spelling her name, Piper.
What?
She's Piper, P-Y-P-E-R. You understand Afrikaans? So let's just connect it to P-Y-P-E-R. Otherwise, she will give us negative reports.
No, the error is in good spirit. The error is in good spirit.
Sorry, Mr. Van der Westhuis is this correct? It's P-E-Y-E-R. P-E-Y-E-R. Yeah, paper. You pronounce it paper. Like in paper in English.
You write on, yeah.
In the last sentence, just help me. 3.7, the committee was informed that there were cases that the board or council would request the minister to dissolve it. A typical example given was the dissolution of the council of the Tshwane University of Technology. I'm not so sure whether the council requested it. What is the right example is the university, the Motsezulu University. That council definitely requested, but the council of the University of Technology in Pretoria, Tshwane, didn't request it. It's wrong information. So let's, if the members agree, let's change it to Walter Sisulu perhaps, because that's correct. The council of Walter Sisulu requested the dissolution and the appointment of our administrator. Okay. What is Sulu?
Oh, I
said Sulu. Yeah, sorry. They're actually taking the minister to court regarding this dissolution, so it's not correct.
Actually, it must be two full stops now.
Yes.
out on the our workshop.
I'm just trying to think, because I know that I was not there, I apologize. Is it not practice to also mention, as we report who was there, to also record apologies? I don't know, maybe something that's not done with reports. I don't know. Just to link with your question, where are the resolutions? Because I see here recommendations. Who are we recommending to now?
Chair, I just have got two things to read, but first let me attend to this one. The workshop itself, I wouldn't say it's not a constitutional, it's not a formal meeting, well, it's a formal meeting, but it's together with other people who are not members of the committee. So that workshop is supposed to arrive at conclusions, whether you call them proposals or recommendations or whatever you call it, which must come to the formal portfolio committee meeting, where we are on our own to look at what was resolved and so on and adopt that format, so that the action plan, the resolutions there, everything becomes or gets to be owned by the committee. But when you go for an outing, what do we call that, some strategic plan sessions or something, that on its own, whereas its members of the committee together with whoever it's a resource person and so on in that meeting, does not constitute a portfolio committee meeting. So after that, you bring all that here and it be formally adopted. If not adopted, it remains whatever the workshop did, but not as owned by the committee. So I thought when we bring these here, and including your question, is for that adoption. So the recommendation can be done by the workshop, but then be analyzed properly by the portfolio committee for adoption, if we agree with whatever I said. Because at that level, we don't have time to even check whether this is constitutional, it's not constitutional, it's this or that. So we can't just adopt things from workshops. We must then come here and say, yeah, everything here is in line with how we're operating in Parliament. We take that which is useful, and so on and so on. But yes, the question that you raised, and as well seconded by Honorable Dukobo, is where are the because there we arrived at an action plan to say we have got the following programs, we want them done by this time, and so on. That's what is supposed to be an attachment or an addendum, whatever you call it, to the actual record. As to this is what happened, and then the workshop arrived at this. So it will be for the PC to adopt that action plan or to say, no, let's amend, let's do this. Sorry. Properly in this kind of a meeting.
I guess this is helpful to Anneli, because some of the issues that we are looking for might be appearing but under a different heading. For example, on page 9, item 6, what is listed as matters for consideration? When you read them one, they sound like our resolutions of the workshop. Because then that's an action. For example, it says there must be a visit to Walter Sulu. This must happen. This must happen. So it might be that they were not correctly labeled.
The resolution should come formally before the committee for adoption and utilitarian. Okay.
And also,
also Chair, I think on that workshop that we had a nice plan that we had as a particular community, which I think it can even clarify some of the issues that are coming up, if ever I may be. Can just we did it in the form of a table. It was well structured, well by whom, what time, when. If ever it can form part of the report, because this is how we completed our workshop then, and we had a clear picture of what is it that we expect to do here, when.
I think that must be brought before us for adoption. Yes,
Chief. Just before we approve of that, could I just? On pages, I think it's 5 and 6, Ms. Nkau of the Auditor General. I always believe that the initial is M. Nkau. And not P. Nkau. And then also on that page where we were just now, when we said that we want to call the councils of FET colleges, page 9. Under paragraph 6, the first bullet, I think the plural would just be read better there, the councils of FET colleges that did not submit their annual reports would be called. Thank you.
I second that because it's not accepted. I'm not accepting the correctness of
our No, you can't throw away a report.
Yes, we are now going to do the recommendations of the
we have had the reports of the department, the annual report of the department, and the NSFAS and so on and so forth. What are our impressions? Okay, we can just look there and see whether we have captured everything that we think Parliament must hear. This is what the report
of the
Parliament.
Gee, sorry.
Chair, the report on the HOPE, there's a, on page 10, it's Professor Iron Rensburg. It's spelled incorrectly because this Rensburg guy is, I don't know. It's Professor I. Rensburg. Instead of the A, the E. Rensburg. Thanks.
Sir, we're done. The minute of this September 13th.
Small typo under recommendations. It's not the Biara. The last page, the bullet on top. Other education and training should be prioritized and conditions of service for AT practitioners.
The next sentence, fast track.
Part on the status of the establishment of the two universities.
Chair, it was my understanding that we wanted more feedback from the department as to what has happened already, but also I think there was a call that we be served with the future plans and even including timelines of, you know, when the department is planning to have those universities in place. Yes. But if we go with what we've got there, fast tracked, must just have two T's, but I think you're quite right, Chair, that we asked for a comprehensive report, which should include the progress this far, as well as the timelines in terms of the establishment of these universities.
On the same point on adult education and training, because I think the other concern was
besides improving the conditions, the other concern was of standardization, because they are not similar in different provinces. Whether we shouldn't say be improved and standardized.
What are we considering now?
Gee, I'm not sure whether we can add it to this report. But the fact that we currently have three universities under administration, I need to be advised on this. And also the fact that we have problems with certain universities, entities who were established as a result of the merging of certain other institutions. Like, for instance, again, the Walter Sisulu University. Is it possible to add it here? Because I think these were main problems in higher education, and we should actually record these instances or problems. Thank you. Yeah. And problems with the mergers.
May I, as far as the mergers go, also include the attention be given to the proposed demerger of Madunsa, Limpopo University with the Madunsa campus.
Anything else?
By the way, when are we to submit this? The issue is, I seem to have missed it. I don't know how, but it's fine. If we'll just have done justice to it, it's all right.
I'm not making a follow-up to a proposal that has not been made. But if I don't know what the time frames are, what harm it would do if we would, okay, no, maybe just say we have seen it, but can we do the final adoption next week? I don't know what time frames we have.
Yeah.
So that maybe we have another look at it.
Yes. That second paragraph on page 11 regarding NSFAS, you remember we had NSFAS last week at our committee meeting, and you suggested that they should provide us with a report regarding the position of the previous CEO and the court case and whatever. We focused on that, and we don't get that impression in this paragraph. I also raised questions as to who the credit should go for this unqualified report, so I would like to have it noted, please, if it's possible. Thank you.
Can I just, at the bottom of page 11, that first bullet dealing with the filling of vacant posts, it goes to more than just the filling of vacant posts. According to the annual report of the department, they are still operating under an interim organogram. And I was just wondering if the committee would go along with us including finalization of the development framework, because apparently that's what I call it in the annual report. Finalization of the development framework and the filling of vacant posts, so that the whole design of the department, it seems to me, should still be finalized, and you only can really, and I think that's the minister's problem, you can only really start filling posts once you've decided on how the structure of the department should look in the final organogram. Thank you.
The standard procedure of the public service administration, there must be a finalized organogram. I don't know where the challenges are, but before filling of posts, there must be an approved organogram. Okay. So, say, there must finalize that.
Okay. Chair, I was going to request that we don't adopt this report today.
Mm-hmm. If it is possible, if you can, I don't know what the schedule process is, but if you can give ourselves time, maybe 30 minutes or an hour on Thursday to finalize this so that we have time on ourselves to go through this. Because even when you look at the recommendations, just there, but you look through the report, you feel that there are so many things that you can wish to add, of which I don't think it would be possible for us to do that now.
Okay.
So just getting that.
Members should send in contributions so that they can be factored into the report that we can consider on tomorrow afternoon. Can we meet maybe tomorrow around 2? Just finalize this. Just 1 hour or so.
Okay.
I can't remember what we have on that program for committees, but I think today both basic and higher. Tomorrow it's basic in the morning, or then if the afternoon is open, yes, we could utilize it. Because I know Thursday in the morning is basic probably. Yes. Yes, so that's why. But if tomorrow afternoon we're not engaged that much, so we can as well agree. But at least if we need to go through it seriously. Because
no. Are you planning a meeting now? I'm going back tonight. I've got commitments in Pretoria. It wasn't scheduled. Beg your pardon?
I'm only the deputy.
But I want to be good. I want to be.
What do we recommend? Do we recommend that we send in
Chairperson? If I may be so bold to say, I don't think that anything that any member would like to add, obviously, it cannot be out of line with what we've discussed up to now. And I was just wondering if we would be able to submit those recommendations via the secretary of the committee and then circulate it, and if we don't respond or within half a day, or because we've got until it seems Thursday afternoon or Friday to submit, that we rather try and just by electronic means resolve this. I personally expect that the inputs will just be in line with what we've in any case been discussing in the committee. And should anybody feel unhappy about it, that we then leave it, perhaps take a decision to leave it to the discretion of the chairperson then, whether something that we propose is in line with what we've been doing as a committee the way in which we've been arguing and voting in the committee. Because I can just imagine that it would be senseless to schedule a meeting and then we don't have a quorum perhaps because of other commitments by members. It's only, I know we can get a quorum by bringing other people in, but in a sense that will just be, to me, have as little value or be not valid, because it's us who's sitting here that really knows what we've been discussing. So if I can recommend that we submit electronically to the committee secretary, that we ask of members to submit not later than lunchtime tomorrow, that we give the secretary an opportunity to just circulate what he has received, if any, and that we then just comment on that, and that we leave it to the chairperson for the final decision whether such recommendations is in line with what we've done.
Still fine. We can do that. Make submissions of what we think could be the recommendations, because it's merely a consolidation of the reflections that we've had in the meeting. Yes.
No, it's fine, Chairperson, except that the BRRR report is not like our own minutes where we can afford even a single, more than one slipper. Because if this is going to be presented to Parliament, and I see we're giving the chair a blank check now, I think we must also undertake not to raise problems when the chairperson reports them on the report. But I don't know. I think we must, if people have input, we must circulate, but I think a meeting must sit to say, yes, this is the report. Unless we understand all the implications to say, no, when we say chairperson must use his discretion and he has used it. So we reserve, we keep our peace.
Chair, I think I'm concur with Honorable Tukobo as to say, yes, we can say this like as we are saying, but let us make sure that there won't come a time when we all say we did not adopt the report, is the chair's saying, because really that would mean we haven't adopted the report. This is still a draft. We haven't gone to the final draft. We haven't gone to the final report of it. That was the meeting that we were busy trying to come up with. So we must agree as a committee that we don't have the final report and we are not going to adopt it as a committee. If ever that is what you are agreeing upon, then let us take it so and let us say we all agree and we won't see any person one day saying a committee, portfolio committee on higher education did not adopt the report as we are not doing it.
Let me not repeat what is being said, Chair. I think in as much as I sympathize with Honorable Klopas that she will be leaving and she so much wanted to be there, in our work as a portfolio committee, we are judged mostly by this as well. The rest that we're doing, the minutes that we have just adopted, they don't matter the move. Those are things past and so on. In fact, if we had known that we needed to deal with it here, we needed to have even shelved the minutes and focused on this one for proper conclusion, even if it meant reading it here. But for now, I was going to say, Chair, 30 minutes or an hour before the Basic Education Committee meeting on Thursday, what could be done? Yes, still circulate the input tomorrow. Thursday morning, sit for 30 minutes or so with a finalized kind of document. We try and go through it in a serious manner, Chair, than many other things we might have done, so that we do justice on this one. So by the time it goes to the records of Parliament, it reflects upon us in a good light, in a good manner, because next time these issues will follow us. And we need to be accountable to them. We can't say we did not have enough time and that's why we submitted some work, Yes.
No, that's fine.
I agree with Honorable Makubela. I will go through, if there is a final copy, then Anela will agree that I phoned him specifically to make sure that we don't meet tomorrow. That's the reason why I've got commitments. Because I wanted to make sure with that we're not going to meet tomorrow. So if I can get the final document, I will discuss it with my colleague and then make my inputs by means of a telephone call. Thank you.
I won't be back,
but I'll discuss it with my colleague. Thank you.
For both has managed.
So you read everything about the BI, eh?
Are we meeting tomorrow in the afternoon? Agreed that we're meeting tomorrow in the afternoon, 2 o'clock, to finalize this report. Because there is basic education in the morning of Thursday.
I thought the agreement is that half past 8 or so on Thursday,
to 9:30, we shall be meeting to correct this. So it's a,
yes.
And that's what she was saying, that if the final report is there, she was going to interact with her colleague and then make input by the time he comes.
Yes.
So on the morning of Thursday, they are done with that discussion. So it's mainly to say yes, adopted, we're rectifying here and so on.
Yeah.
And 30 minutes from now will be too much for that purpose. Then we're able to.
Now, Chairperson, there are 2 dates.
Yes.
Maybe you should just put to the. I know that there are those who said tomorrow, half an hour. There was also a view on Thursday, 2:00. Tomorrow, 2:00. I'm tempted to support that one. At least we have more time. I'll like come for another 30 minutes and we.
Could that be tomorrow, 2:00?
Tomorrow, 2:00, then we finalize the report. Okay, no, thank you, colleague.
See, when are you going to send us the final document by email then? I just need to know. When will we have the final document? Tomorrow morning? Around about 9:00?
Around 10.
10?
Yes.
And then the meeting will be at 2:00, thank you.
2:00, yes.
If that is the case, then what is the final time that for us to submit? Because I guess Anele can promise if nothing comes from us. Does it mean then we must submit by close of business today? I don't know.
It's best. I mean, we must reflect on what the department has done the previous year, how we think they utilized their funds, whether they have achieved their targets, and then we can recommend what must be done.
What I wanted to say was some of us will get other meetings from this engagement, so it may not be that thorough equal. I thought perhaps we may say tomorrow morning, let's say by 9, analysts will be having our input, consolidating for that hour or so. Then from 10, let him circulate what is there. I know it will be circulated into our own image, whatever. We're likely going to retrieve that, some of us, by 1 or so after some meeting. But that will still do, at least we'll know that will contribute to the process. So what we'll see at 2, it will be something we shall have known. And for her, in the process, we'll have been able to interact with that report.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.